Okay, we want this to be tight, sharp and tight.
Hold on, I'm just muting messenger chats because I'm very popular, you see.
Yeah, well, I've got a message too, so... Fuck you, Jash.
Okay.
You want to read my message?
Okay, you do that. Who's it from?
It's not from you. Yeah, well, you still sent it.
Worst. Hello and welcome to episode 17 of For Your Head Top. I'm Jay.
And I'm Jack.
And we back.
We're back at it.
What was, I think, a 2 month...
hiatus. It was a planned hiatus.
Definitely planned hiatus, Jack,
wasn't it? We told people it was going to happen.
No, we didn't.
Did we not?
No.
Then it was an unplanned hiatus.
There were some troubles, and that meant we couldn't really record.
Well, there weren't troubles. It was just, you know, busy, busy, busy.
You were living in a cardboard box.
Yep. I was homeless. not too far from the truth. No, we were like Drizzy himself, busy like a bee.
On the move, constantly.
Constantly on the move. I've actually been to the land of Driz and back.
Very jealous.
Again. spent Crimbo in the six.
Mad. Madness. Even Drake did that. You were in the same place, basically.
Well, I lied, technically. Technically, I wasn't in the six. I was at the top.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. It's like a really shit... Well, not shit, but
not
really
only did you lie,
government town.
You gave up on your lie much too quickly. You got to commit to one or the other.
Yeah, you know. Next thing you know, I'm hiding a child.
I wouldn't put it past you, to be honest.
No.
So, we have quite a bit to go through, considering we've taken a bit of a break. But we're not going to do that. Because first, it's the end of the year, it's the beginning of the year, and the beginning of the year means one thing. It's awards season. So we've got some awards to give out.
Exactly.
The second annual For Your Head Top Awards.
How good does that sound? We've made it to the second annual awards. Should we jump straight in?
Let's go. Should we monologue? Do we need like a host monologue? Because I haven't prepared anything.
You say that like you're still ready to riff.
I'm ready to riff, but I'll be honest, I'm not sure it'd be great to hear.
I think if you can at least match 30% of Drake's award speeches, we're in a pretty good stead.
So a lot of familiar faces out here tonight. See, there's Drake in the crowd over there. Give it up for Drake. Give it up for Drake. Hey, Drake, where's your kid, huh? Didn't want to bring him along. Thank you. Good night. I think that'll do. Jack, take us into the first award.
So, for the first one, we've got feature. Plenty of features this year. Oh, no shit, we're doing feature of other person, aren't we?
Yes.
But there haven't been plenty. If anything, there's been the opposite. Okay,
I was like,
do it again.
I'll clarify for you. It's like, no, don't take his moment. He's got the spotlight. I do this all the time. He'll cruise through it. He knows what he's doing.
Plenty of features, including, you know, TY Dolla Sign. And
please don't call him TY Dolla Sign.
What would you like him? What would you like him
Dolla
to be known?
Sign. His name's Ty Dolla Sign.
Oh, sorry. No, usually I call him Ty Dolla Sign. But when I was looking at yours, it's like it's formatted.
I did just write TY Dolla Sign. To be fair,
yeah.
I'll forgive you.
Okay.
Jack, what are the nominees? I hope you out. Because you're kind of bombing on stage.
Okay. Okay. So for our first category, we have feature. This being anyone who's featured on a piece of music by Drake this year. And I'll be honest, it's a thin list. For the five that made it out of a possible six, there's Jay-Z on Talk Up, Future on Blue Tint, MJ on Don't Matter to Me, Static Major on After Dark, and Ty Dolla Sign on After Dark. I mean, closely missing out was Ty Dolla Sign and Jaded. providing uncredited backing vocals.
I'll be honest, I think Ty Dolla $ign and Jada was robbed of a nomination.
We made a mistake. Ty Dolla $ign and Jada, if remembered, might have won it.
maybe. But who is the winner, Jack?
Dramatic pause. And the winner's Jay-Z on Talk Up. Say I lost 90 bricks and it happened. You probably wouldn't believe everything that you're seeing right now if it wasn't live action. I ain't on the gram. They record who I am. God to these dope boys. How do you not be a whole fan?
It was really easy to come up with this, actually.
Because he was the only feature on the album.
I mean, there were other features. But the Jay-Z verse is really impressive.
Get close to home, I smell like a kilo of steel.
It's a disgusting, like it makes you want to put, like, that stank face on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, how do you feel about Hove rapping about his coke days again?
It's good. I mean, like, him reflecting on being a dad on 444 was nice, and, like, a family man and all his problems. It was nice, it was old man rap, it was what we needed. But, like, braggadocious, I'm from the streets, Hove. Also fun. And he just sounds really confident. Like, he's letting the beat do whatever, and he's just, like, rapping wherever he wants, and it still works.
How do you feel about the number of features on the album?
It's a surprisingly low-key amount, I think, because normally he's quite feature-heavy. And he works with a lot of people. You always see him, like, talking about working with different people, and some collabs don't come out, some get featured all across the board. But on his albums, at least, they're normally there, but... very few. Two posthumous ones out of, like, six as well on this one. So it's working with even few people.
Yeah, I mean, you constantly hear about Drake mentioning that, you know, his production process is very much a collaborative one, and that he wants that to be a part of his music. But, you know, the lack of features on here, people haven't really brought that up enough. You know, a lot of this is his own music. He doesn't ride on features to make this sell. Like, he doesn't need to for a start, but, you know, everyone was riding J. Cole's dick for triple platinum, no features. This album's gonna fly, like, when it comes to numbers, so I don't really...
Yeah.
You know, where the fuck's
25
the love?
Songs as well.
Exactly. So basically, just airing J. Cole out.
Which maybe we shouldn't do, and we'll get onto that in news, but first we've got our next award, though, and that is Best Music Video. So we came from a place before this year where Drake had released, what, maybe like 3-4 music videos in the last like 3-4 years? Featured in tons, not really much of his own works. We had Sneak In, we had Energy, I think.
Yeah, and very low key.
Yeah, very low key as well. So Hotline Bling as well. But 5 in 1 year, which is a perfect amount for a nominations list. So the nominees for Best Drake Music Video are God's Plan, Nice for What, I'm Upset, In My Feelings, and Nonstop, because those are the 5 music videos. There was no selection process. They just got automatically nominated.
Which made our lives a lot easier.
But there was a selection process for the winner, and the winner we came up with, have to clarify, these are all... there is no committee vote to this. It's just us two coming up with winners.
it's a discussion that tests our friendship and mutual respect.
Winner of Best Music Video, God's Plan. Hey, hey. She say, do you love me? I tell her only partly. I only love my bed and my mom. I'm sorry.
50 dub, I even got it tatted on me. 81. Wow. I mean, what can I say? This is designed by committee. There are incredible music videos with incredible skits, and we gave it to God's Plan.
God's Plan was a nice opening to the year, because we covered news, if you want to check out back previous episodes before you head top, we covered news about him giving money away, and we were like, what's he doing? This is cool, but what's he doing? And then, because he clearly thought that news wasn't getting enough headlines, he was like, I've got to show everyone too in a music video.
There we were being like, oh, he's, you know, becoming generally more charitable, he's doing really good. Oh no, it's for a music video. I see. Typical Aubrey.
No, we don't want to take that charitableness away from him, though. The idea of the video is very cool. His first collaboration with Karina Evans as well, who directed 4 out of these 5 nominees. Theo Scudra being the other one, but he didn't fare too well.
Was that Nonstop?
Yeah, with Nonstop.
Yeah.
But Corinna Evans, take your award.
Yeah, I think it was impressive, the God's Plan music video. It was pretty cool what they did. It was a cool concept. You know, some of the skits from some of the other music videos run it close.
In My Feelings had 2 good skits, I think.
Yeah. They're really funny, but like when it comes to it, this is the one that kind of got both of us. And that's what it is. It's a people pleaser.
Yeah.
And I don't think I know a single person who watched that video who didn't come away with a bit of a warm feeling.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And we needed that coming from Drake because he's the good guy.
Stop it.
Moving on.
Okay, so the next category is best moment. This is just any particular moment that's caught your eye. An individual snapshot of what is Drizzy in a year. And for the nominations, we've got the Walk It Talk It video appearance, general charitableness, chart success, the nerve, the audacity, and She Say Do You Love Me.
So I was talking with a friend recently, and it was pointed out to me that most of our Drake moments aren't actually moments.
What's he talking smack at our moments for?
Like, general charitableness isn't really a moment. It's kind of a collective of things. Chart success happens over a year.
Okay, right. I would like to point 2 things out. Firstly, fuck you. And 2, those 2 moments, inverted commas, were the ones you came up with.
I'm saying it's a flawed system in
general.
Don't
come over here airing me out.
I wasn't airing you out. I just wanted to show self-awareness. We're like Deadpool, man. We're talking to the audience. Breaking the fourth wall.
Okay, I would like to point out
my blanket's collapsing on me.
I would like there to be no explanation for that in the podcast. I would like to say that all the ones I came up with were actual moments. She Say Do You Love Me and the Walk It Talk It video appearance. Sorry, I'm currently watching.
No, I wrote down the Walk It Talk It video appearance, brick.
And the winner is Walk It Talk It video appearance.
Hey.
I gotta stay in my zone. Say that we been beefing, dawg, but you on your own. First night, she gon' let me fuck cause we grown. I hit her, gave her back to the city, she home. She at home now.
Right. Everyone's going to think that was a hard cut edit, but I'd like you to know there was no edit in there.
He just cut himself off from laughing and went serious for 5 seconds and then went straight back to laughing.
What are your thoughts?
It's a great video.
It's a great video.
Like, the Migos are on board, and like, I remember when we saw it, for me at least, didn't think Drake was going to be in it. I thought he'll just skip out on this one, that's fine. He's only got a verse, it's okay. And then he slides out.
Your mate can hate on a lot of our moments here, but that for a moment, that we're talking an isolated 5-second moment in that video where Drake slides out and you see him for the first time with the hair, like the perm.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's beautiful. And then he's got the moves to back it up.
Oh, has he?
The Michael Jackson, like, what? I describe it as like the Shimon dance.
The leg kick, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, leg kick. A kick.
Yeah, it's like a sweeping flick thing.
It's incredible.
So, we've had best general feature on a Drake song, but now we move on to best Drake feature on a general song.
I will say before we get into this that I think we mentioned it last year. This is the only award show where there's like 2 people announcing the awards and they're just like chatting as they're announcing them. But that continues after the announcement of who's won.
Okay, so what we have down as the nominees for what we have down, like, we didn't come up with this. The nominees for Best Drake Feature are Walk It Talk It by the Migos, Look Alive by Blockboy JB, No Stylist by French Montana, Sicko Mode by Travis Scott, and Going Bad by Meek Mill. And the winner is... It's Going Bad by Meek Mill. That's the winner. How the fuck you gotta do it if you really wanna fall till you fall when you're back against the wall and a bunch of niggas need you to go away. Still going bad on them anyway. Saw you last night but did it all day. Yeah, a lot of murk coming. Fun thing about it is we haven't even spoken about Going Bad because it only came out in the time between our last episode.
I would like to make a defense of the For Your Head Top podcast here and say that we waited a bit longer to try and, you know, balance it out. You can't just make a decision straight after Going Bad comes out. You've got to sit on it.
Yeah, so that was
the reason for the delay.
Yeah, definitely not because we've only listened to the
journalistic
song twice.
Integrity.
Going Bad's fun, and it's fun to see him back with Meek again.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew he buried the beef, but in the time since, we've seen him come on stage with Drake and do some stuff. And did you see the video that Drake put up on Instagram when Meek's album came out?
No.
Oh, mate, it was incredible. It was like Drake's face and Meek's face photoshopped onto, I think, like two basketball guys.
Oh, I did see this. This is really funny, yeah.
And they were like sitting down and having like a serious conversation.
Yeah.
And they were just like, I'm sorry I hurt you.
And they're like, I wasn't there for you.
And neither of them are like shying away from addressing it as well. Like Meek's been on Funk Flex talking about it and talking about the beef and how like how they're good now. And he even freestyled over Back to Back.
I did see that.
Which was pretty good. And he says, he said apparently like they're on the phone like every night to each other, which makes me think it's more than a friendship now.
That they're on the phone every night to each other.
Yeah, he said in the interview, it goes, yeah, we are on the phone like every night talking to each other, man. It's like, we're cool, we apologize.
Drake has really weird relationships with other rappers. Like he moved in next to Kanye and then would just walk into his house whenever he wanted. And now look what's happened with them.
I know. It's funny.
But man, Meek and Drake back together. Like,
do you think this is better than Rico? I'm not sure. It's still new. It's still new. And we've been listening to Rico for about 3-4 years now.
But that one line, the where the flow changes. Yes, see the buzz, so they sent me, dog.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of really cool vocal stuff he does in the track. And I know it might have seemed like Sicko Mode might have been the obvious choice for this, but speaking personally, you know, I thought
Jay is a salty Kanye stan, so
it doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense for the song.
Be the right, cut the lights.
Like, there's no doubt it's a hype feature. But I think Going Bad just had a bit more about it.
Yeah, and on the pure basis that someone very close to both of us who doesn't give a shit about Drake or hip-hop in general actually likes Sicko Mode and actively turns it off when Drake comes on made it very difficult for me to treat this as the best feature of the year. When clearly, like, Travis Scott's, like, and the production is carrying the song. It's not Drake's, like, standout performance.
What are you talking about? Are you not hyped that, like, Drake's taking half a Xanax in songs and falling asleep for 13 hours?
Takes a responsible amount of the drug.
Drake is the change we need in rap culture.
You know, meanwhile, The Weeknd's talking about, like,
doing cocaine
until
his nose bleeds.
Yeah, and fucking Drake's checking the box.
Oh, and also something that happened in between the time that we were gone. Sicko Mode actually went number one. So that's another point that Drake's been number one this year.
So can we officially count that as four?
I don't think officially, but like, you know how like people used to say before Drake actually had a number one that he had the most number ones? Remember that was a thing?
I'm vaguely aware of it, yeah.
Yeah, he had like the most number ones for a hip hop artist or something. And but he had no number ones until like 3 years ago. It's kind of like that. So I think that adds to like his numerous amount of number one singles he's been on. But it's just another case of chart dominance from him.
Yeah, and you've been loving that this year.
Yeah, the chart dominance was something that almost beat out the Walk It Talk It appearance.
Okay, so for the next category, we have Best Banger. Now, to describe Best Banger, we had a few things that we were trying to kind of work out the creases with this category, because it's a new one.
There were songs on this album that we felt like we couldn't realistically put in a best song kind of category, but they still needed some love as well, because Drake doesn't just make lyrical songs, he makes songs for everyone, and you know, a lot of his fans just like the hard shit. But then we found it kind of hard to categorize, didn't we?
So kind of like earlier this year where we did the bracket, you find that in times like that, or when you're going through an album, the songs that you like best often tend to be either softer songs or songs where he bars for a long time. And that's all good and well, but there's no love for a hard banger. You know, there's What a Time to Be Alive. You're not going to get any of those songs touching a Do Not Disturb or a Jungle, but they're still hard. So,
yeah, and they serve a purpose.
Exactly. And the purpose we defined it as was cruising in the car with the boys.
That was what described banger best. You saw it as a Range Rover. I saw it as a convertible. Night or day, car with the boys.
So for the nominations, we have Elevate, God's Plan, Can't Take a Joke, Talk Up, and Blue Tint.
Some bangers amongst those.
Some real bangers. I mean, God's Plan's definitely a cruising around in the day song, and Elevate's definitely a cruising around at night song.
Oh, absolutely.
But there can only be one winner, and the winner is, I'm dismayed to say, Blue Tint. My window got blue in the tint. Did this shit once and I do it again. Look who I'm fucking again. I had on ice, but then I watched the ice get thin. Now that she's
look who I'm fucking again.
I had on ice, but then
you, me, and the boys just shouting that into the open roads.
Now, look. I know that we've just kind of taken down the quality and any reputation that 2 years doing these awards has got us.
I think you're being too harsh on Blue Tint.
But Blue Tint is incredible, and I will defend it till the day I die. It is a really good song.
It is a really good song. A bearable future, so much so that he earned a nomination.
Exactly, and this is something we said on episode 13. You know, keep Future away from the track, close enough in the album to be like near the song, but not like total album worth. Like, because too much,
not enough where he has to actually be classed as a feature. Blue Tint is a very good song, and I'm happy it came out as winning. And I mean there was a lot of bangers on this album, and there were some like notable exceptions even in the nominees. Non-Stop is a banger that didn't get a job. I know you were pushing for Mob Ties as well.
A very good song that I think, you know, has been a bit slept on by us, but the rest of the world really loves Mob Ties. As we know, hip-hop historian LeBron James clarifies that as his favourite song. So who are we to doubt it?
Exactly. And I'm glad we created this category to give Drake another award for the mediocre shit he puts out. It's a bait comment. Don't at me.
It's really weird that, like, we made a Drake podcast. Because, yeah, we like Drake, like, a lot. Like, yeah, what are you going to do? But also, we talk about Drake a lot. And so, we're not so far as with stands, because there's loads of things we don't like about Drake or admit that he's a bit shit sometimes.
I think that's a healthy level of fandom where you can like admit their faults but still enjoy their stuff.
Yeah.
I do wonder if because of the podcast is the reason why I'm like quite into Drake at the moment.
Yeah.
I feel like if I didn't have a podcast though, I might just not care.
It does feel like, you know, if he released a really bad album, we'd be obliged to talk about it.
What happens if that happens? I mean, some people will say it's already happened with Scorpion, but like,
we just make if he released a
really
podcast,
bad album, are we, yeah. Oh god,
All Time Rush. That's what we'll call it. It's not funny. He's in hospital.
What are we even talking about? Next category, best beat.
As professional as last year. I think we
might have gotten worse. I thought we'd be in here and we'd be like, we've got a year under our belts. We know how we've been shown the ropes. We know what we're doing. Cruise control now.
Really, we just got comfortable.
Exactly.
We're like we're in a year long relationship with this podcast or a couple of years and, you know, we've got comfortable.
We have a lot of beats to go through, but there can only be 5 nominees, unfortunately.
Yeah. So an interesting tidbit about last year's awards was that the winner of beat won the winner of song.
Very true. Very true. Passion Fruit won beat and song.
So to prevent any hijinks, we left them till last, didn't confer at all on what our results were, and we wanted to see if the same thing would happen.
And yeah, so completely unbiased. And another fun fact of that, because that could have come about because of tampering, is that 4 of the 5 nominees for Best Beat are nominated for Best Song.
Interesting. It does feel what we just did was like at the start of a Match of the Day highlights reel, when like one of the commentators will say, Arsenal are unbeaten in the last 7 and Huddersfield haven't won at the Emirates for the last 20 years. Over to you. And you just know Huddersfield are going to win.
Okay, those nominees for Best Beat are Emotionless, Sandra's Rose, Is There More, Nice For What, and After Dark. And the winner is, and it was quite tight, but I think what are you laughing at?
you just had me on, you know, tender hooks with the and the winner is, and then and you released the pressure,
and the winner is
After Dark.
No, it's not.
Exactly, but you left it too long, so you better fucking hurry up.
I was going to sing After Dark as well. I was going to go, After Dark.
I've been resisting that the whole podcast, but it's only because I couldn't hit that note that I've...
After Dark.
It's a pretty good attempt. It's better than...
I tried. No, it's Nice For What. The winner is Nice For What. Put your phone out, snapping like you Fabo. And you're showing off, but it's all right. And you're showing off, but it's all right. It's a short life, yeah.
You can't do that. Do it again.
That's a tension release. Subverting expectations. Call me Ryan Johnson.
Who the fuck is Ryan Johnson?
He directed The Last Jedi. And he was like, I tried to subvert their expectations, and Star Wars fans collectively went, fuck you.
Subvert the high expectations to low expectations for the next film.
I actually quite like Last Shadow. Nice For What, though? Who?
What was your reason for Best Beat of the Year? Nice For What? Wax Lyrical.
I think it's a great use of a sample, and it's a complete shift of what the sample was doing as well. It was also a move into that New Orleans bounce sound that we quite like coming off of Lemon. I know that's not a Drake song, but like hearing it in mainstream music from Lemon last year, or 2017, I guess, used in what seemed like a really authentic way that didn't ruin the sample at all. And like when you have vocals as legendary as Lauryn Hill's, so to put it in and have it fit seamlessly, and basically it's built around that sample. And the fact that not much is tweaked about the sample means, you know, it's really prominent, but still great.
I do feel like Nice For What has a difficulty that when you first listen to it, it can seem slightly monotone or abrasive, but it definitely grows on you. And it's a song that I feel has exemplified Lauryn Hill's timelessness by it just like firing up the charts. But it definitely has its unique sound. Like it's its own song. It's not just like lifting those lyrics or lifting the sample. It's a really, really good song. The breakdown is actually really enjoyable. It's better than In My Feelings in that regard. I feel like that kind of loses something.
Yeah, definitely.
And kind of came out a bit overproduced, but Nice for What is like the change of pace as it goes through. It doesn't really change in melody, but it changes in pace quite a few times, and I think that's kind of really refreshing.
Yeah, favorite beat off a Drake album. Producer for that track was Murder Beats, who I think did the sample work, and Black and Mild, who is a New Orleans based producer, and he's also the one who produced In My Feelings as well.
And something we should say for an honorable mention is Emotionless.
I was about to say that.
We've talked about the wizardry that happened with that that track, with the, you know, how 40 like took out the word from the Mariah Carey sample. But and also, I know you're a big fan of Sandra's Rose.
Yeah,
that was an original sample. That's like really incredible. But for this one, we just felt that it's so central to what this song does as a component of the song. The beat is the strongest part, and it holds the song up for sure.
Absolutely.
It's the thing you remember. If you were trying to think of In My Feelings, you would sing the hook. But if you're trying to think of Nice for What, I think you would think of the beat before you remembered any lyrics.
Yeah, I think that's a really succinct way to put it. The beat is absolutely the most important part of the song, and that's probably why it takes precedent over the others, even though they're all of the nominees are great beats.
So our penultimate category is Best Verse. Now, a lot of times in Drake albums, it's a common mainstay that you have a long barring session at the end of the album, and you'll have songs that are sometimes just hook verse hook. There's a real variety to the work he does. It's not kind of cookie cutter songs. And so to define best verse has always been difficult. On this album, we've had similar problems kind of defining what a verse is, how long a verse is, but we've kind of been looking at all of them and just deciding from like a holistic view what we think when we look at the actual length. We look at kind of bars per length, and we always take into account whether it's a singy song, whether it's a barry song, whether it's like objective quality. And so the nominees for this category were Emotionless verse 2, Sandra's Rose verse 2, Is There More verse 2, Jaded verse 2, and Diplomatic Immunity.
And what we get from that is that Drake can't verse one for shit.
Yeah, I think it is really funny that, and even in Diplomatic Immunity, the second half is better.
I think it's just a weird way that's coming out. I mean, there are plenty of verse ones that could have got on, but their verse two just happens to be a bit better. But it is funny seeing all those verse twos.
And the winner is There More, verse two.
Sweeter the berry, the blacker the juice. The boy is back in the booth, ready to tap in the truth. Too many lyrics about houses and loot. Too many Walt Disney characters, mouses and goose. I mean, you know I love a challenge, but challenged by who? I let you bring 1,000 recruits.
Like I was saying before, Is There More verse 1 could have easily been nominated. I thought that was also like a really good verse, but the second verse just sneaked it, and it's really great. It's really heartfelt and introspective, and I think it's vulnerable in, I mean, we know Drake is quite an emotional and vulnerable person anyway, but like this feels like a different type of vulnerability, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. The flow is definitely different to a lot of others on the album, and that's what I've really appreciated with this album as a whole, is the kind of switching up flow and a lot of the freestyles he's done this year. With Is You More, you're completely right, and I know we've discussed it before on the podcast, but it is a perfect bridging song across the two sides of the album. The vulnerability, while still having the kind of rap delivery, allows you to kind of transition into that more mellow second half.
I like when it gets to the end, when he actually comes to like contemplating all this shit, and he's like talking about like the very lavish lives he lives, and just like where, and that's where the Is There More comes. It's like, is there any more sense in doing these songs when I'm high? Is there more than life than going on trips to Dubai? Stuff like that. And is there more to life than just when I'm feeling alive?
I did find that when the news came out about his kid and Adidon came out, I had a very conflicted view about the kind of things that we go, because a lot of the things we like about Drake are that he's very open and personal, but at the same time raps about strippers and it's funny.
Yeah, you know,
and I always kind of had that problem with him, that those two things don't really gel. And I think it's really interesting that on this album, an album that some people have kind of left alone, everyone definitely, like, it's a mile away from people's top fives and things like that, as usual. But when it comes to this song, it's a really honest response to a lot of the questions people internalize about Drake. How can you be going making music videos with strippers and these kind of things when you've got a kid and you're getting older? Like, it's in the back of everyone's minds. Like, you're above 30. You really should be, you know, moving on with life. And this is where he comes out, and is for me consistent with people's views of him. He is being honest. He has been really honest, and he says, you know, how do I resolve these two things in my life? Like, and I feel like it's interesting that he thinks about that.
And it's the kind of emotional maturity that, like, I think he hasn't had necessarily throughout his career. Something like Marvin's Room is very emotional. I think we'd be remiss to say it was mature. You know what I mean? But, like, this is open, honest, and raw, but still with, like, a head on him. Like, he's grown up. This is him stepping into this role now. And we don't even get that throughout the album. So I think this is, like, it's a really big point in these verses that, like, he's growing, or he thinks he needs to grow.
And that's something that's really interesting. We talked about this album, how it was kind of a response to Adidon in many ways, especially lots of Side A. And I think it's really interesting that after Adidon came out, we were kind of like, well, yeah, like, you know, they're like, Pusha did, like, talked about, like, the whole strippers thing, and he's like, let me be your world, yuck.
Yeah.
And, like, I know that's a thing he does, but it was really well placed, because you're like, yeah, that's, like, kind of gross. Like, it's funny, but, like, it is kind of gross. And when he comes back and says, and all of these asses that never come in proportionate size, am I missing something that's more important to find, like, healing my soul, like, family time? I feel like he is kind of looking in the mirror and reflecting. He doesn't have to come back and say, like, yeah, I'm like, messing things up. Like, March 14th touches on it, but this is a definite show that he's taken some of those things on. And he knows those things.
Yeah, it's an acknowledgement rather than a dismissal.
But also with this verse especially, and for me, why I think it's the best verse on the album and this year, is because it's succinct, but the bars are really good. Like, at the start, when he's talking about, even if you take all the statistics and carry the two, if he rounded up the numbers and rounded the troops, there's still nothing they could really do. Like, it's too bad the reality checks didn't cover the balance is due. Like, it flows really well.
Mm.
And it doesn't take away from that kind of soft feel of the song.
Yeah, just because it's got that very introspective nature, it doesn't lose out on the actual quality of the rapping.
Yeah.
And that's like a really great combination to have. And before we go on to the next category, I do want to make a quick mention to the Jaded Verse 2 that was nominated.
I'm with you on that.
Is a great verse, and I think it speaks to how great it is that it's up against all these rap verses when it's a singing verse. And that was, like you were saying, at the top of the awards. It's really hard to classify what is a good verse when half of the verses on here are sung. I know when we talk about songs as well, we kind of have a hard time to talk about the verses because we don't really know how to talk about them lyrically, because when he's singing, it's not necessarily as lyrical. It's more emotional. It's more the sound and the melody and stuff that's carrying the song. But with Jaded, there's real, you know, I feel bad. I feel like you can tell he's like really cut up about supposedly Georgia Smith, and he gets on in a really nice way that isn't, it's kind of bitter, but it's also not, it's reflective. And I especially like the bit in the song where he says, and you still look amazing, but that's beside the point I'm making. Like, he's getting cut out of what he's saying because he's just reminiscing about her. Like, I think it's just really great lyrically.
Yeah, I do feel like that song shows he has a completely other string to his bow, which are these soft emotional songs that we've had from day one. And that verse especially is, not only does the melody change, and that's like really interesting, but it has kind of what Diamonds Dancing had at the end, that kind of bitter, angry, like, go then kind of attitude. But this time it's mixed in with a lot of emotion. And I think it makes for a really good song. But we had the opposite problem with Diplomatic Immunity, a long session of bars that are really good parts, but maybe weaker in other parts. And the sheer length of it makes it difficult to compare. we had that problem with Jaded as well, in that it's fairly short, and being a kind of singing track, the pace is quite slow. So it's always difficult to compare apples to oranges. And so when we're doing this, you know, it's tricky. And like, we don't want to just say, oh, what's the best singing track? What's the best banger? What's the, like, it's difficult to just like do that and separate them all into categories, because at one point you've got to turn around and say, hey, what's the best song on the album?
You're right. We do have to at one point say what we think the best song on the album is. And that point is now, because that's the last category we have.
Hit me with it.
So, our nominees for best song. Like I said, 4 out of 5 of these were nominated for best beat. Our nominees are Emotionless, Sandra's Rose, Is There More, Nice For What, and Diplomatic Immunity. And the winner is... Jack is holding his breath in anticipation. Is there more? Is there more to life than all of these corporate ties and all of these fortunate times and all of these asses that never come in proportionate size? Am I missing something that's more important to find? Like healing my soul, like family time. Is there more to life than just when I'm feeling alive? Is there more?
Is There More, song of the year. Last year's was Passion Fruit, and this year's Is There More. Does it feel like this year we've taken a more like measured approach? Last year was Passion Fruit, and it's a very good song, and it's why it got popular. But I feel like we love Nice For What, we love God's Plan, those kind of songs. But I think this was a song that it was difficult to look over its quality just for the fact that it hasn't kind of been picked up.
Yeah, I think it is, and it's weird. I mean, when we spoke about the album originally, when it first came out, I think we talked highly of this song, but it might have slipped from our radar until we've been coming back to the album again and again, and it's just always stayed there. And I know when we were discussing, like, putting together a nominee list, I was really hoping you were going to say Is There More, but I wasn't sure you were, because again, like we said, we don't really have a gauge on how well liked it is, because it's not one of the singles, and because this album has quite a lot of singles or big moment tracks, like even like a non-single, like Don't Matter To Me, it's got a lot of hype around it because of Michael Jackson. Same with Talk Up or something. So there are, even songs that aren't singles get talked about, but this is one of those ones that, like, it's a deep cut, and it's a deep cut that deserves respect, I guess.
Yeah, I just found that, like, I've listened to this album this year probably 20 times, like, a lot. That's not just through, like, listening to individual songs. It's through, like, complete listens. And I'd say every time I've come back, other songs have kind of waxed and waned. But no matter how many times I listen to the album, that bridging song, that it's the keystone that holds the whole album together. And I feel like if it wasn't there, we'd be looking at this and saying, these are two separate albums. They aren't a succinct project. Like, how has he done this? He's just done this to get out of the deal. But this song is the reason we don't.
And I think that is a narrative that's being played out, and that not enough people have put together themselves. And I don't want to, like, dismiss anyone from not putting that together, but that is something that's a really key part of the album. It's not two albums. It's, you can't just say, oh yeah, if we split Scorpion into two projects, then it's good, and then it's fine. It's like, no, this is meant to be a whole project with two distinct sides, with Is There More being the point in the middle where everything comes together, with the first half being about him sort of flexing and him addressing Pusha and, like, shoving off the haters. Like, and then we get to Is There More, and it's a really reflective moment where he's like, wait, what am I doing? Like, what is this life? And that leads you really smoothly into side B with the search for relationships and love and something more complete.
Yeah, and we talked about that kind of narrative of the album where, like, as you say, in the first half there's a lot of braggadocious rap stuff and talk about the petty rap beefs and all of that to culminate in Is There More, and then to lead into Peak and Jaded, slow, kind of Nothing Is The Same, and Nothing's Into Somethings-esque songs,
yeah,
where he's really introspective and, like, looking at his life and talking about his regrets, especially with women, and then to move from that into kind of a couple of songs about the club, and the problems he has with that, and then into like After Dark, Final Fantasy, more like raw sexual songs that we've not really had from him, and then leading into March 14th, like that whole kind of like cycle of like women and the problems he has, like related to like just being with too many women, not attaching emotionally properly. And I feel like that's a really interesting point, that whole half of the album. But without Is There More, for me, like, it's harder to get and empathize with that's actually a problem of his, because the whole first half of the album is him talking about like cars and women and whatever he's got. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to actually take that at face value, you need an Is There More.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to take it, strip it further, like the outro of Is There More being the Aaliyah sample, which isn't actually a sample, it's sung by Napalm, which I only realized like a week ago. But the sample of More Than a Woman, and the lyrics being I'll be more than a lover, more than a woman for you, it's like a precursor to exactly what Side B is about. It's a really well-placed outro that isn't just there for the sake of it. It fits in with the idea of the song and also leads into Side B. And if, like, to push that idea even further, like, using an Aaliyah sample on a song called Is There More, where Aaliyah famously passed away, like, under quite tragic circumstances at a really young age, like, it's not in your face, but it's there under the surface that life is fleeting and we have to make the most of it while we can. And that's the kind of artistry that, like, I don't think Drake gets credit for, even amongst fans like us, because you might not pick it up. Like, that's a really nice touch to me.
Yeah, that, for sure.
It might be a stretch, but it almost feels purposeful, especially with how the song's composed.
Yeah. It's a song of the year.
It's a song of the year. And, you know, I'm sure people listening will think we've made some wrong decisions, maybe even some wrong nominees, things that we've snubbed. So get in the comments, talk about it. Talk about it on the Reddit. We'll be around to discuss with you your thoughts. Make sure you let us know what you would have chosen instead, what we've got wrong, what we got right, if you think we did.
Yeah. So we're going to be on the Reddit for a couple of hours. If you want to chuck us your complete nominations and who you think won, and we'll be there to discuss it. And I think we could probably improve our list if we put our heads together.
Yeah, and it's always nice to hear what other people think as well. Like we said, we don't really know what people think about Is There More. We've been waxing lyrical about it, but it might not be something that resonates with a lot of you. So, yeah. Looking
Is
forward
it trash?
To
let it. Us know.
And with the awards done now, we want to just get into a bigger summary, because there's some songs we haven't talked about because they didn't win any awards that, you know, we just want to go over, and even some songs that maybe aren't awards worthy that we still want to talk about. But let's do a summary of what 2018 was for Drake. So what did we start off? We started off the year with what?
We started off the year with Scary Hours.
What a long time ago that was.
I know, a two-punch combo that really hit the year off.
Diplomatic Immunity, God's Plan. Diplomatic Immunity being the harder bars song. God's Plan, taking the world by storm.
For sure. And we kind of mentioned briefly earlier that moment with the She Say Do You Love Me. It was crazy how that just took over. I mean, it is the one part of the song that stands out from the rest. And
it was everywhere.
Yeah, and I know you've got some feelings about it.
Well, like, I mean, I think it could have maybe made a push for the win in the moment, but I feel like it just doesn't hold up too well now with the birth of his son. If that's the only things that you love now, then
Is There More can't be song of the year.
Yeah. So, you know, it feels a bit weird if we awarded that the win, but
yeah,
it's still it was a moment. It was a great moment.
And then, as we talked about, there was the general charitableness.
He gave away so much money.
He gave away a lot of money. And yeah, one of it was, or a large part of it was a music video budget. So, you know, I don't think that money would have been going to him anyway, like some of it. But it's definitely a great way to spend the money. And he did a lot of other stuff that kind of took more thought, like the scholarship for the girl.
Yeah. Also the money for the half-court basketball shot.
Yeah.
That was like 50 grand or something. It's huge. I mean, for someone like Drake, it's nothing, but like,
yeah,
for a kid who's just paid a couple hundred dollars to see him at a concert, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's mental. And that's life-changing amounts of money.
And then we had the announcement that he's going to release his album in June. We're all looking forward to it.
Yeah. And then we had a few other announcements in June. We had a few albums
had
coming out.
Five albums. Wyoming projects.
Oh, where's Drake at the moment? Shares his location. Wyoming. Closely followed by kind of a black spot on the year for Drake, I think. And that's the Pusha disses. And initially when you hear Daytona and the last track, it's a great album, obviously. And to be honest, it's quite a long time afterwards, so I wasn't sure whether he was going to come back. But when I heard that he did, I wasn't surprised. But I was also surprised it wasn't more on the nose. For then Drake to reply, I was again surprised. But Duppy was good. That first, the nerve, the audacity.
It's really enjoyable when you hear that, when it first comes on, and you're like, ooh, okay. And, you know, I think we both agree that had the beef been a bit more back and forth than it ended up being, we can see a situation where Duppy features a lot more heavily in the nominations for these awards. But just, it kind of ends on a sour note. Whether you thought Drake won or lost the beef, or however your own personal opinions are on it, it's a marker against him.
Yeah, there's no doubt that beef didn't turn sour for Drake and like fans of Drake. But something we've talked about in the past, and I know you kind of agree, is that Drake's kind of song making ability, like, it feels like it outstrips Pusha when it comes to just like the sound of a song. You know, Pusha T's got this raw hip hop ability, but Drake's this like machine at making songs that make it in the wider market. So when you listen to Duppy Freestyle, it's like, it sounds good. Do you know what I mean? It carries quite well. It's just as a song, melodically, it's smooth. It's got those soft bars over a smooth beat in the background, whereas Pusha T's is
let's not say soft bars.
Yeah, hard bars over a soft
hard
beat.
Hard bars.
And and Pusha T's, like, it's a bit more raw. He picks the backing track for what it does thematically rather than how it sounds. And I think what we were talking about was that Pusha T would probably outbar him over the course of a back and forth.
And that's not to say that we think Drake can't rap. We think he can. Yeah. And it would have been a really good back and forth had it continued like that. But I think ultimately we'd probably see Pusha T win. Outbar, but it would still be up for debate.
But see, I disagree there. Like, I think he would have outbarred him.
Exactly, that's what I mean. It'd be still up for debate.
But Drake's songs would have, I think he would have possibly won just for the sheer fact that you can generate hype by making a good track.
Yeah.
By, look at Back to Back. Back to Back wasn't lyrically the most incredible song you've ever heard, but he made a popular diss track that banged.
It's so the only Grammy-nominated diss song. It was nominated for Rap Song of the Year. That's incredible.
And that's what I mean. If you make a diss track about someone that you want to play back in your car 30 times, well, then you've already won, because whatever they're saying, you listen to the intricacies of it more. You can't get someone to get a really well-crafted line if they don't want to listen to it twice. And that's why I think he would have had more of a chance of winning the hearts and minds of people if it hadn't kind of gone how it did. But it did, and that's something we found out. Drake has a child. That's pretty big news.
It's huge.
And then the album's dropped.
Yeah, and we saw Mr. Big Scorp turn from boy to a man.
Yeah, in June, bigger news than Scorpion happening. Drake coined the name Big Scorp for himself.
I love it. I love Big Scorp so much.
And was off his barnet with Charlie Sloth in July.
Oh, I you know what? I forgot about those. I forgot about both those freestyles.
The Cam Drake!
Because there was the Charlie Sloth one, and there was also the Behind Bars.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of moments from Behind Bars that we love.
Behind Bars, we'll go back to and listen to a fair bit, actually, I think.
I think so.
It's fun.
Yeah. It holds up.
With Scorpion, though, I mean, we're 6 months removed from Scorpion now. Let's talk about what we think about the album, how our views have changed on stuff, and give some love to songs that maybe missed out on a few awards. I think a few of those I want to mention Emotionless and Sandra's Rose got a bit screwed, I think.
Yeah.
Just because it came up against tough competition, but it was always there and thereabouts. Beats versus songs.
Yeah, it was always...
nominations, just couldn't clinch the victory.
The way we did the scoring was kind of a little bit weird, but Emotionless, it was always a song that was like either second best or like... But it just held up so well over a number of categories. It lyrically was awesome, just had a... It fit really well in the album.
The sample use is just amazing. Yeah. And like, I love it when samples like actually mean something to the song. And the idea, if you didn't hear Jack's analysis of it when we first spoke about it, the idea that he took out the emotion from the word emotions to create a song called Emotionless is great. Like, it's really clever. Some, I think, 40 magic there.
Yeah, for sure. And like, we want to keep this discussion on Scorpion like pretty tight, but where do you think it stands? You know, you were saying it was possibly in your top two a few weeks removed from Scorpion, and I was saying it definitely was in my top two because, you know, I'm a no holds barred stan.
I'm going to say top three definitely, fighting back and forth for top two.
Where would do you don't have to say where the other two would be, but what would they be?
The other top two would be If You're Reading This and Nothing Was the Same.
Nothing Was the Same? That surprises me.
Yeah. I think because Nothing Was the Same is quite concise, and this is anything but. But at the same time, Scorpion does some things that I really like over Nothing Was the Same, and Nothing Was the Same does some things I don't like. So I'm not sure where I'd put Scorpion there, but it's got a podium place, I think. And I think a lot of people have thrown this album to the side and... It actually does a lot of things really well.
Yeah, I struggle a bit because I think my top three is in no particular order, Take Care, If You're Reading This, and Scorpion. But I'm not sure which way around. I think If You're Reading This might edge them, but I'm not sure. But what I do think is interesting is that their albums throughout his career and that he's still keeping it up and that there's not a definite curve to his performance in albums.
Yeah, and there was a worry that we were maybe going that way after Views and More Life. But I think we can both say that, I mean, based on our rankings, we both think that Scorpion is a step up from those last two albums.
Yeah, initially when I listened to Scorpion, I was kind of frustrated with the amount of Pusha T response on it. I didn't want there to be that much. Well, I probably wanted there to be that much, but like I think from an album, I don't want that to be kind of stuck in the moment of what was happening with Pusha T.
Yeah.
I want it to be like a piece of like work that you can look at in 5 years and look at it the same way. And I think that's kind of difficult with this. But I think it was done in such a way that like now you can look back on it and it's definitely, it didn't go too far.
And it almost serves a purpose to the album. As in the reflecting that comes off of those moments are quite powerful and make up the big parts of the album sometimes.
Yeah, you would hope that your big artist on a label wouldn't be that responsive to things, especially when it comes to an album. And like, you're gonna get panned by critics when you're that kind of responsive and getting into like the little things. But I think that he is more symptomatic of the amount of music he releases. Like an album a year at this rate, like that's just gonna happen. That's what's happening in his life at the moment. If an artist did an album once every 3 years and then something of that scale happened to them in the public eye, you'd think there'd be one or two songs about it on a 10-track album. So I think by proportion, yeah, it's actually okay.
Yeah, I agree. What about some of our least liked songs? We're talking about Scorpion quite highly, but it's very hard to find an album where you don't at least think there are a few meh songs. What would those be for you?
I mean, we've been dancing around it, but I think I'm Upset is one of the weaker songs on Side A.
Yes, I agree.
Apart from that, I like every song on Side A, but on Side B, there are a couple. There's Finesse, I'm not a massive fan of. I think it's like too slow paced for me. And That's How You Feel, I'm not a massive fan of That's How You Feel.
Interestingly enough, they're both produced by the same guy.
Wow.
Kadestra, and he also produced Jaded, and you can kind of tell that those they kind of have a similar kind of feel about them.
Yeah, and as we know, I wasn't a massive fan of Jaded when it came out.
Yeah, but your opinion on Jaded has changed.
Yeah, a lot, significantly.
In terms of me, I think I'm Upset was always going to be one of the ones that didn't do it. I remember hearing it as a single. It was a single that came out just before the album as well, in a time where there was still a window between was he going to respond to Pusha T? And you see a song called I'm Upset and you're like, oh, he's upset about what Pusha T's had to say. And then you listen to it and it's like, oh, not really. It's just kind of feels like a bit of like an empty trap banger. And I think Drake's better than that. I think it's probably one of his weakest singles, produced by Oogie Mane. I don't know, we joked when the album came out about like, you're like, who's Oogie Mane? I was like, oh, he's produced for Matt Ox, the 11-year-old rapper. Turns out Matt Ox is half the reason why I'm Upset exists.
Which just explains everything, doesn't it?
There was an interview with Oogie Mane with in The Fader recently, and he said the beat was made years earlier, and Obie O'Brien, who is an OVO affiliate. Imagine your name being Obie O'Brien and you being part of OVO. Anyway, Obie O'Brien reached out to Oogie Mane because Drake had heard some Matt Ox stuff and was liking it.
This is why OVO isn't what it should be. Because Drake's ear is commanding things.
I like when you see him on his Instagram stories and hear the songs he's listened to. It's like, Drake, the song's trash. What are you doing?
Oh, OVOXO should have like become one entity, and it should have just picked up all decent Canadian artists. It's crazy to me that people like Jazz Cartier came up in Canada without being like directed to places like OVO. These are the artists that should be like snapped up and like cultivated in one huge label in like Toronto. And I think that's what OVO should have been. Do you know what I mean? It should have like kind of spoken for Canadian artists, especially from Toronto, and made the scene and got its name like and helped rappers come up. And in a way it's done that for some people, but just not nearly enough.
Because that was the rule they were going with, right? They were only signing Canadian artists.
I think that's kind of what they put out there.
Well, that's changing now.
Really?
Because OVO just made a signing.
And this was?
Popcorn.
And he's Jamaican, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, as far as I know, he doesn't really have Toronto links. I mean, like, so I think Boy Wonder's Jamaican, but like he is also Toronto guy. But Popcorn is just Jamaican. And they've like been friends for years, I think, and Drake's had an appreciation for his music. But it was an interesting signing to me just because he's not not Canadian. And I thought that was kind of the OVO rule.
Yeah, for me, like, OVO's, it's a bit confused about what it is, and any momentum it had going with it has kind of been lost.
Yeah, it does at the moment feel like Drake is the only artist pushing OVO. But when he's still delivering quality albums like Scorpion, I guess it's kind of fine. So, I mean, one song that I thought wasn't quality, I'm kind of coming round of, is Ratchet Happy Birthday.
Interesting.
See, I thought this was my least favourite song on the album for ages. And just from listening to the album more and more, I've kind of grown a bit used to it. It's kind of dumb, but...
It's fine.
It's fine. It's kind of funny.
You know how we sometimes say about a song, it does what it's supposed to do?
Yeah.
I think, like, sometimes that seems like a very obvious thing to say about it, but this is a song that doesn't do what it's supposed to do. It's not a song that girls in the club go, oh my god, yeah, Ratchet Happy Birthday's on. But imagine if you asked the average person, they wouldn't know what Ratchet Happy Birthday is.
Which to me suggests that like it's there for a purpose on the album, and like thinking about the lyrics and stuff, it's not a typical birthday kind of song. It's more of like it's like encouraging, but also like understanding that this like girl, whoever's birthday it is kind of going through like a rough stage in her life, and he's kind of trying to be the shoulder to cry on, but also like looking for some affection back. And it's this weird middle place where you can, in the album, where especially you can tell like Drake's a bit emotional coming out of, actually, right, if we want to go deep into this, the sequencing of this is peak Summer Games Jaded, which we say is all three are about Georgia Smith, right?
Yeah.
Then we get to Nice For What, which is female empowerment. So Drake is in a situation where he's like, I know what to do. I'll just make women feel good about themselves. And then
they'll love me.
And then the next song is Finesse. It takes some finesse. And he knows he's got to craft this perfectly. Ratchet, happy birthday. Find them when they're weak and vulnerable. On their birthday, they're downbeat. Don't worry, girl. It's your birthday. Have a good time.
It's your fucking birthday.
And then they kind of shun him. And he's like, that's how you feel. Whatever. Then back to meaningless relationships where he's on Blue Tint. Look who I'm fucking again. Ratchet Happy Birthday actually plays a very important part in this album. I kind of joke about that, but I think it is there for a reason, because you're right, it doesn't fit the kind of narrative of what a birthday song is supposed to be. So I'm okay with it.
I think this song would have been much better if it was titled Happy Birthday, brackets, Ratchet.
Do you reckon? Yeah. Why?
Because I like the idea of people like at like a kid's birthday party typing in happy birthday and playing it on the speakers, because you know Spotify's a family thing now, and
yeah,
then
yeah.
It goes on to the next most popular song and it's just it's your fucking birthday. So any last thoughts on Scorpion?
If we're talking about sequencing, an important part of the sequencing which we covered when we initially discussed the album is those last three tracks of After Dark, Final Fantasy and March 14th. And I know you've got some like strong feelings about Final Fantasy and March 14th. I know you like Final Fantasy a lot.
It's a very good song. It's a real shift in gears from the other albums, and it's something new, which is hard to get from someone who's released like 7 albums or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that he's still bringing out and showing like new abilities and kind of and handled it well. It can become a bit too crude sometimes, like Ornar isn't sexy, it's just a little bit gross.
Yeah,
but Final Fantasy gets it right.
Yeah, it kind of crosses that line between the two, and the very sexual stuff, it like it serves its purpose and it's also different, and it's just interesting to hear. And I know you were pushing for it very heavily in Verse of the Year and sadly didn't quite make it.
Yeah, it's just because I feel like I couldn't seriously put it as Verse of the Year, but I wanted it in the nominations. Just because it's just incredible. Like, verse one, Final Fantasy. It's a thing we'll all remember from this album in 10 years.
And then the closer of the album is a song that, in the nominations at least, didn't get too much love from us. Especially when we're talking about sort of how much we appreciated honesty and maturity and stuff. And that was March 14th. And you got some problems with March 14th.
Yeah, I just think with March 14th, it's just like, it seems a little bit off.
Is like, it in the same way that kind of like 8 out of 10 feels a bit ingenuine because of the whole good guy stuff and then how he's acted throughout the year post-Scorpion?
Yeah, you know my issue with it is that I would not have a massive problem with this song. I think it's really personal, I think it's really well worked, and I really like it as a song. But my main problem with it, like, and I feel like a problem that like articulates my point best, is that it's called March 14th. It's not called Adonis. It's called March 14th. The emphasis is on the fact that this happened, this song happened the day after I found out, or the day of that I found out, and it more importantly that was before the Pusha T beef.
Okay.
So I've made this really self-reflective song about how much I love my son, yeah, but I feel like the emphasis is on the day I found out was before the Pusha T beef, and that I've been caring ever since, and all this is, I believe that it was recorded before then, and that's you know, that's his genuine feelings and it's honest, but I a thing that rubs me the wrong way is that it's constantly, well, not constantly, but like the title is emphasizing that you know,
look, this is when I did it.
Yeah,
I'm not in the wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And as soon as I found out, I was caring for my son, and that I'm not a deadbeat dad, which I believe is the way it went. But I feel like the emphasizing it is wrong. If you want to make a really personal song that's addressed, make no mistake, to his son, it's talking to his son, then it shouldn't have those kind of overtones.
Yeah, March 14th puts it as a move rather than a heartfelt closer, which I think it is, and like, I don't deny that, like, he really does care about his son, but it kind of puts in a weird light. And I mean, he's named songs about, like, locations and times before, but
yeah, definitely.
This is still kind of different.
Like, don't get me wrong, it's consistent what he's done with what he's done before. I really like the track. I believe that, like, all the things in the song are kind of heartfelt and all that. There's just a couple things that rub me the wrong way, and it stops me from really liking the track. You know, like, really, really liking the track. And I think there's just a couple issues with it. And they're more just kind of, you know, when you listen to a song and you think, oh, it connects with you, I kind of think that this song just does a couple of things to me where I'm like, So I can't enjoy it as much as other people. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a really well-written song. I think, again, I like how open he's being and the stuff he's addressing. I think everything is there. And now you make the point, I do understand what you mean. I think I still like the song and can still listen to it without that kind of thinking overtaking my listening. But I do understand what you're saying as, like, it being a move that was just a bit unnecessary. As in, not the song or the place. I think the song is a perfect closer to the album. I think the title, you make a very good point about. I think that takes us into news quite nicely, because he shows he loves his son at the end of this album. And recently, he's posting pictures of his son's art on Instagram.
Yeah, I thought that was sweet.
I thought that was quite nice. Adonis better than Picasso, don't at me.
Yeah.
It's just like a little finger painting he did that Drake's got framed, put up on Boxing Day as well, which is really nice.
Yeah,
kind of shows that, like, he's spending Christmas again with him, which he mentions in the song as well, like spending last Christmas with him.
Yeah, for sure. And I hope that, like, everything works out and that, like, it's on a better road than it was.
Yeah, I think it will. I think I was gonna say I like to think Drake's grown from this experience. I'm not sure completely how true that is, but yeah, I didn't think there's any situation where he's going to be the deadbeat dad that he's being made out to be.
Oh, no, I think that's a completely, like, wrong narrative.
Yeah. Also spotted on Instagram recently, on his Instagram story, was J. Cole. I don't know if you saw that.
I did. He was in his new Bentley, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And they were just, like, hanging out. I think it was, like, as Drake was going back to Toronto or something. Or maybe it was in LA, I was not quite sure, but... yeah, I don't, as far as I know, think they've... Actually, I think they've collaborated once on Jodeci Freestyle.
Okay.
But that was about 5-6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, after all, we know that J. Cole's had some problems with Kanye recently. So that's probably what they're connecting about. And I think these Kanye problems, man, they're not going away. Seems like we have to talk about it on every episode.
I know, and we promise this is going to be really quick. We've limited ourselves, we've identified it as an issue. But Jay, before we get into it, what are the J. Cole and Kanye problems?
I think 2017, J. Cole released a few songs, diss songs, just saying that, like, he thinks Kanye is a bit lost and doesn't really know what he's doing and kind of just turned a bit whack. I think they're cool. Kanye, like, tweeted a few months back about them being on the phone together talking shit through. But yeah, J. Cole had some problems and made them apparent on record.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one. As we'll get through, he's kind of had problems with Travis Scott as well and a few others that are especially related to his visit to Trump. But I think we should just have a quick fire Kanye round.
Yeah, so what happened? What happened in the last couple of months with Kanye and Drake?
So Kanye... he went on a big Twitter rant at Drake, like a seriously big one, as in quantity, because Drake wanted to clear a beat.
Yeah, it's a song called Say What's Real. It was on a mixtape. I think it's on So Far Gone. So because Say What's Real is using the beat from the Kanye song Say You Will, which is from 808s, and because it's a mixtape, it didn't have to go through, like, special clearing because it wasn't sold. More and more mixtapes these days are going up on Spotify, and with... I think So Far Gone having its 10th anniversary, it looks like Drake is trying to get that on streaming platforms.
Yeah.
So that seems to be where or why he's trying to get the sample clipped so he can put it up on streaming so people can listen to it a bit more easily.
And Kanye said he posted a text of this and said, "This proves this beef is faker than wrestling." And I don't know, maybe he just thought, like, with Kanye, like, coming out there saying, "Oh, it's all love, that he just thought, oh, I might be able to get a sneaky clearance out of this." Like, but I think he does have a point, Kanye. Like, it's kind of like, you know, what you're thinking, man. Like,
yeah, it's like, why? I mean, you're sending shots throughout the whole of the year, basically, since your album's come out. And then you're like, oh, by the way, actually, just need a quick favor and then whatever.
But also, like, it does kind of, like, he went on a rant after that saying that, like, there'd be no Drake without him because of 808s. He said that that Drake had, like, threatened his family and threatened his wife, and no one threatens Ye's kids, and no one threatens Chicago and all of this. And after all this, Drake rings him, and Kanye's, like, on the phone now to Drake, and then Drake threatens his family again. Not a good move. And then subsequently, he's really pissed off, and he's like, oh, I don't know how Travis let this happen, man. Travis is supposed to be family. And he's like, Travis let Drake diss me on his song. And then he rings up Travis, and then the next tweet is, Travis just threatened me.
Wait, no, I thought he said he was good with Travis.
Nah, well, at the time, Travis threatened him. That's what he said. He said,
I feel like that's overblown, right? Surely Travis didn't threaten him, considering they have the same family.
Right, I thought that, but then the tweet in black and white.
Right, I need to see this. Travis Scott threatening Kanye. Because this happened a while ago, so we're, like, going through backlogs. Oh, shit, what?
Right? What's the actual tweet?
I hit Trav earlier today, now he just hit me. More threats. I mean, so I'm on, for some reason, I'm looking at this on Cosmopolitan. The read next article is, Kylie says that Travis and Kanye are okay now.
Oh, so good.
Cool. Glad we got that cleared up. But the interesting thing about that is, there's a reason why Travis let it go. Do you want to know the reason?
Go on.
Like, why he let the Kanye diss on Sicko Mode.
Why?
It's because Drake turned that verse in on the day that Astroworld came out. So basically, what's happened here is, again, another big situation of misunderstanding and miscommunication. Travis, like 95% of the population who've listened to Sicko Mode, heard the Drake verse and went, "Oh, that's fire. Awesome."
So good. So good. He looked at it once, he was like, sound.
Except we've read the lyrics. And we see that the song, the verse, is all about Drake wanted to have Kanye shot and killed. So it's understandable that Travis Scott maybe didn't notice that was happening, considering most people still don't know. Like, when Kanye was talking about the shots on Sicko Mode, I saw a lot of reaction which was like, so what? He said checks over stripes, big deal. I was like, no, you don't understand. He's taken it right. Jesus Christ.
That's like, and the map of his estate is like, right is like Kanye's house is in there.
Yeah.
Like, down the street and take a right is at Kanye's front door.
So I understand why Kanye's mad. I understand why Travis didn't stop the Drake verse. It's all kind of just a bit funny though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous.
So I don't know what Drake and Kanye spoke about on the phone. But his response in general was, I think, an Instagram post with just some laughing emojis.
Yeah.
So, doesn't seem like it's getting cleared. It's a shame. Kanye has since spoken about Drake following Kim on Instagram.
Yeah, he like only just found out.
Like, I don't know, man. Drake's playing mind games with him, and now he's unfollowed Kim on Instagram just a couple of days ago.
This is my theory, right? He knows, and I don't think this is a good one, he knows Kanye has, like, a seriously unstable mental state, right? Kanye is not okay. Kanye's, like, off the meds. He's gone rogue. So Drake, to fuck with him, has just, like, constantly, like, sneak-dissed him and, like, followed Kim Kardashian and, like, got at him from all these angles, like, texting him and calling him and shit like this to just, like, slowly break him down. And I think Drake might have caused this, the Kanye we're seeing today.
And the thing is, I don't even think that's too wild of a theory.
I know.
And that's worrying. Like, just seriously, guys, sort this shit out. There should be no reason for beef anymore. You've both done some not great shit to each other. Like, let's just water under the bridge this, so you can just both live in the same neighborhood together. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I think that fairly succinctly, maybe not the 5 minutes you wanted, but...
Good. It's better than 40 minutes, as usual.
Yeah, pretty good.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, with our semi-succinct Kanye discussion over, I think that leads us to the end. To the end of our show back. First show of 2019.
That's
not
crazy.
A real year. It doesn't feel like a real year.
Podcast started 2017, right?
Yeah.
Damn.
I guess we'll get back to our regular schedule of song of the week and like news in a normal way at the top of the show eventually, but like we're getting back into the flow of things.
Yeah.
Again, like we said, get on the Reddit. A lot to talk about this time, so please do tell us what you think about our awards picks. I hope it's the kind of thing that like sparks discussion, really, because I do want to know where everyone kind of lands with that kind of stuff. You can listen to us on iTunes, on Spotify, on whatever you listen to podcasts, really. Subscribe as well, and if you want, even write us a review. Jack, any final words? Socials? Is that a thing? Do you care?
No, but there's a Twitter account and an Instagram account for your heads
up. You can follow them if you want. Are we going to post there?
Might do. I do secretly post all the time and then delete them when Jash goes to check.
Ah, I see. I see how it is.
And if you've made it this far into the podcast and you clearly don't hate us, head over and check out News Munch.
iTunes. I'm getting plugged. It's my other podcast because Jack sometimes is an unsatisfying co-host, so I have another thing I do.
Yeah, you fucking cheats on me and like
with three other people. It's with three other people. Feel better about it. It means you are worth three people to me, Jack.
Oh my god, that means a lot.
Yeah, we talk about weird news. So if you like weird news and want to hear what the happenings are with that, check that out too. But check
it's
out
great.
For your head top first. That's the one I care about most.
They're already here.
Oh yeah.